Blog Talk Radio.
Politics Minneapolis On Point. I'm your host, Don Allen, and co-host in Studio B, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, it's hot outside.
Yeah, it's humid, Don. The temperature's up around 91, and humidity's up probably in the 70s now. So it feels just like you're in Panama, okay? Or somewhere in southern Florida. But what do we got, Don? Oh, by the way, let me just as a part of important and prompt journalism. Flight 241 out of Seoul, Korea, a 777-200 Asian Airlines has hit the deck, if you will. Don't know the number of casualties. Happened probably about less than an hour ago on approach to San Francisco International Airport. Allegedly one of the safest planes in the world, but it appears that poor execution of landing. They've already began to fix blame, saying that it was pilot error, which means that I assume that the pilots were Asian. Oops. But that aircraft is down. It flipped a couple of times, though the chutes did come out. It's difficult to talk in terms of what the casualties are. But, you know, these 777s, 200s, contrary to what they've been saying, they've been having a lot of problem with them. Had to do initially with batteries and et cetera, and malfunctions and et cetera, and et cetera. So you hate to see this. And as we said before, right now there are no casualty figures. But flight 241 out of Seoul, Korea, a 777-200 hit the deck in San Francisco. Go ahead, Don.
Okay, today we're very pleased to have a guest, a mayoral candidate from Minneapolis, Ms. Stephanie Woodruff. And I would like to tell our listeners about how this came about. I asked her about a month ago if she'd come on the show, and you know her schedule was pretty busy. And so yesterday or a couple of days, she's a friend of mine on Facebook. I asked her to come aboard on the show on today, and she politely agreed. And then she says, "Well, what do you want me to talk about?" You know, and I said, I told her, "says Well, we don't, you know, this isn't New Salem Baptist Church BFL Minneapolis mayoral's candidate forum. We're not going to give you the questions ahead of time. We're just going to, you know,
boy,
shoot
you
from
and Reverend
up.
McAfee are going at it, ain't you?
You're
going at it. Yeah, go ahead.
We're just going to shoot from the hip. And callers that are calling in right now on hold, just phone lines will be open in about 5-10 minutes or so, maybe a little bit less.
A little bit longer than that. We've got some questions, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yes, we do. And so I would like to introduce you to Stephanie Woodruff, running for mayor of Minneapolis. Ms. Woodruff, welcome.
Great. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Ron. It's a pleasure to be here today. Mm-hmm. I appreciate,
appreciate the invite.
And
Yeah, well, we'd like to start out, you know, with some of the questions that we have, or that I actually have for you. The city of Minneapolis.
And then I'll come second.
Yes,
my question.
Yes. The city of Minneapolis is suffering, especially in the parts of the Civil Rights Department, contract compliance, investigation. Can you tell us what your first 100 days would look like as mayor of Minneapolis as it pertains to getting people to do what they are already supposed to do based on Minneapolis ordinance? Please go ahead.
Yep. No, great question. And that's exactly why I'm running. You know, currently I serve as an appointed official to the city. I serve as a vice chair to the audit committee, which was a newly formed committee 3 years ago. That's a volunteer, non-paid position. And that's primarily my focus over the last 30 years of my career in terms of corporate governance, transparency, and accountability. And that's really why I've decided to run is to, you know, I think really the, you know, City Hall has been lacking in that area in terms of the overall transparency and accountability. with everything in terms of the basics, just getting back to the basics and figuring out, you know, what's really happening, you know, all the way from the budget to, you know, how the department heads and how the city is operating. You know, that's something that's near and dear to my heart, that I've made a career for the last 30 years. And you know, we've got a wonderful city. It's just that, you know, we've got a lot of things that we've got to work on to you know, kind of close that achievement gap, address, you know, the folks that are living in poverty and, you know, one of the worst education systems in America. So there's a lot of things, you know, the first 100 days will be, you know, kind of getting kind of that, mutual understanding and respect so that we all agree that there needs to be that accountability. And ensuring that we can create win-win solutions for all. So I know it's a huge challenge, but I'm up for it. And you know, over the last 3 years serving in my capacity as an appointed official, you know, it's really given me an insight as to really what's going on. And I, you know, look forward to, you know, being the next mayor so that I could you know, truly have a greater voice and you know, make some needed changes where we need to make changes.
Okay, Mr. Edwards.
No, go right ahead. I know you must have a series of questions. You and she have been in consultation.
Nope.
So go right ahead. I'll come over in the final 8-9 minutes. I've got a series of different kinds of questions. Go ahead.
Okay, got you. Well, now I'm going to talk about the Minneapolis Police Department and Chief Hartow. You know, in the last 45 days, we've had a lot of controversy with the killing of Terrence Franklin and what would you do to change or address? What would you do to change or address the current situation in the Minneapolis Police Department?
Yeah, I mean that's a very unfortunate situation. You know, I publicly, you know, support the chief. I'm actually meeting with her in the next couple weeks. I haven't met her personally, but we obviously have a lot of mutual friends. You know, I told her that, you know, I support what she's trying to do in terms of bringing, you know, transparency and accountability as part of the MPD 2.0. I truly want to look at that and figure out how, you know, I can provide support. You know, she's got probably the most difficult job in Minneapolis, kind of cleaning up from years ago. But it's so key. I mean, we've got to bring the parties together. There's got to be, you know, from the community leaders, from the chief, you know, and from the mayor's office, you know, I would like to, within the first 100 days, you know, sit down and truly, you know, address these issues and peel back the onion and get a mutual understanding and respect. I don't think we can make these changes unless, you know, we both sit down at the table and listen to one another, because we need to create a win-win here. You know, we need a strong police department, but we need mutual respect. You know, they need to respect, you know, kind of what's going on with the neighborhoods, and we need to work together. You know, we are totally in this together, but there has got to be transparency and accountability so that we can move forward. I mean, it is, you know, she, like I said, she's got a difficult job ahead, and I reached out to her. We're meeting on July 18th as kind of our initial kind of a meet and greet, and I, you know, I obviously haven't had, you know, a chance to look at her plan, obviously, but I want to, you know, take a further look at that and truly understand, you know, really what's been happening, what's worked, what hasn't worked. You know, where can we kind of reach out to the neighborhoods and the community leaders? We need to listen, and you know, we need to understand that we're all in this together. You know, we cannot continue to operate and pointing fingers. I mean, it's terrible situations that happen, and that's just you know, it breaks my heart. And, you know, I think it first comes down to communication, mutual understanding and respect, and accountability of working together so that we can all thrive as a, you know, as a city and in our neighborhoods. So, like I said, I look forward to, you know, meeting with her on July 18th.
Yes.
I think it's like 9 a.m. in the morning. So,
yes, and on your website, WoodruffMPLSMayor.com, you say, You say, I'm a Democrat who appreciates
yep.
of the DFL party. You did not participate in the endorsement process in 2013.
That is correct.
Yes.
You know, I don't believe in it. I mean, the convention is, it holds value, but I just didn't want to participate where, you know, I don't want to cater. I didn't want to cater to about 1,400 delegates when my interests are much broader, you know, to the 300,000 voters in the residents in Minneapolis today. I just did not want to participate in it. And what happened were, you know, there are a lot of games that were played, a lot of wasted time, a lot of young people that, you know, were really embracing the process that were disappointed. And it just, you know, it further divided the party. I don't believe in it. I don't come from that background. I mean, my background is business background, transparency, corporate governance. I don't play the politics of it. Whether it hurts me or helps me, you know, my take is I'm always going to be upfront and honest, and I chose not to participate. And I think in the end, if you read the Star Trib editorial board, they wrote an article about it. They said that I was kind of the likely winner that emerged from that convention because I didn't participate. It holds a purpose, but it's something that, you know, my interests are more broad, to reach out to all the voters, not to, you know, just a few hundred delegates just for that day. So that's why I did not attend.
Okay, Mr. Edwards, I'm going to turn it over to you.
All right. Thank you, Don. Stephanie, good to have
yep.
you with us. What I'm going to do is ask a couple of questions that have to do with, and then I'm going to go back certainly towards your background with the
mm-hmm.
audit committee, which I think your term is till 2015, right?
Correct.
Okay. And then want to take a look at that, and then I have a specific question, kind of give you an early warning, a specific question about how the city is going to come up with that $150 million for its portion of the stadium. But first of all, tell us a little bit about Stephanie. I mean, who is Stephanie? What's your background? What's your academic background? Where did you go to school? Where were you born?
Yep.
Where were you raised? What community do you live in now?
Yep. Excellent. I grew up in a small town, Iowa, on a farm.
Hold just a minute. Don, we're getting feedback.
A little bit.
Yeah, but go ahead, Stephanie. I mean,
is that better?
Yep. Feedback.
No, I grew up in small town Iowa, southeastern Iowa, on a farm, very small town called Columbus City. Worked my whole life, various jobs since I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
Working on the farm, and I also worked on our neighbor's hog farm. I mowed the cemetery. I cleaned the church.
What is your religious background, kind of the values.
What's that?
What's your religious background? Good Lutheran or what?
Methodist. I was
Methodist
Lutheran,
okay.
And then attended the Methodist church because it's the only church we had in town, population 300. So, just grew up. There were 70 kids in my graduating class, and that comprised of five towns together to come up with our public school, Columbus Community Public School.
Okay.
After graduating, I attended Drake University in Des Moines,
mm-hmm.
and got a
Bulldog. You were a Bulldog, right?
I was Bulldog. Yep. And
yeah,
I actually
played
softball for them for the first 2 years,
okay.
And stopped playing my junior year because I just couldn't afford it. They didn't give out scholarships at that time, so I couldn't afford to play. So I had to go back to work. And graduated and had gotten a job with Cargill Incorporated, my first job out of college, and started with Cargill Incorporated in the Worldwide Audit Department, and spent 12 years with Cargill traveling all over the world and Worldwide Audit, and had an amazing, amazing career. Got to see parts of the world that I never imagined, growing up. Small town Iowa. The opportunity. I moved to Singapore in 1994. I managed Cargill's Asia Pac audit function.
Mm-hmm.
I was responsible for 17 countries. I was
mm-hmm.
only 20 years old, and honestly, when I said I would go, I literally didn't even know where Singapore was. But
is that right? Didn't know it was an island state, huh?
I'm telling you. It's,
or city-state, as they like to call it. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And you know what? Those 3 years as an expat was probably one of the most, I think probably one of the most enriching experiences I've ever had in my life. I mean, I always encourage people today that if you ever get an opportunity, and I think that, you know, I look back in my 30-year career, you know, I never really said no to anything, and I knew that it would never be easy, but I learned so much. I moved there, came back 3 years later, and continued my career at Cargill, and then had an opportunity to join Deloitte & Touche and headed up their enterprise risk services practice from a consulting perspective. And from there on, I just, you know, kind of went smaller and smaller companies doing consulting and the corporate governance. And then I launched a software company in Cupertino, California, with my business partner.
Right there in the San Francisco Bay Area,
yep.
Right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. About 6.5 years ago, and we have been completely bootstrapped and financed it all ourselves. I have not had a paycheck in 5 years from my company. And when kind of the market crashed in 2008, I basically, you know, kept believing in my dream and what we were trying to do. So ever since then, I've virtually sold everything that I've owned. I used to live in a house not too far from Lake Harriet.
Southwest part of the city, right around Lake Harriet, Lake Calhoun, back out through there.
I lost that house in a very painful foreclosure 2 years ago because I sold everything to keep my company going. For about a year, I didn't even have a car. I mean, I literally
right?
relied
on. Let me just ask this question, Stephanie. Now, so you moved back from California back and relocated back here in Minneapolis?
I was always here. I was always here. My business partner's who's the CEO and founder is in California.
I've
always lived here. I've been here for almost since I moved here in 1987 when I graduated from Drake. From Drake University. So,
well, let me ask you this question.
I currently now live in the Whittier neighborhood.
Neighborhood, yeah.
Franklin between First and Stevens. So I really enjoy living that close to downtown. And
How was it? I have to ask this question. How was it as a Democrat working for such a Republican-oriented company as Cargill? How'd you get along doing that? I mean, did they know you were a Democrat?
Back in the 80s when I started, they've come a long way in terms of, embracing women and gays and lesbians. And, you know, I've always been out because I've never made an issue of it. You know, I'm Stephanie as a person first. I work my butt off, and my work for itself. And, Cargill has been a great company and a great experience that I had anyway. And it's because, you work hard, and I think if you're able to, put that first and not make an issue of it, and just, your work speaks for itself. I mean, I had an amazing career and opportunity. I got to see the world.
What year did you leave Cargill?
I left in 1998. I left Cargill and joined.
You were there. Let me ask you a couple people trying to, kind of get a feel of who you know kind of in the African-American community, particularly this is now. Was a guy by the name of Randy Staton still there before he was fired as Affirmative Action Director? Was he still there when you came in the early 80s? Remember him, Randy Staton? He was in corporate?
I joined in 87. That name doesn't ring a bell.
He was fired. Well, then, but you must have known Bill Douglas.
Know the name, yes.
Yeah, Bill Douglas was the Affirmative Action Director for Cargill for many years. Lives right here in North Minneapolis.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Did you ever have a chance to sit down with Bill, to talk to Bill a little bit about how things were going at Cargill, what the diversity commitment was, anything like that?
You know, not at the time. I mean, I was a brand new auditor, so I seriously traveled 80% around the world. So
we were never
in Minneapolis. So it's one of those times we'd be gone 5 weeks. You'd go to the post office and stop our mail, I'd go out to a small town grain elevator in Montana, and hit hit all the grand elevators.
Sure.
Yeah,
yeah, beautiful
totally.
Country, Montana. Beautiful
oh
country.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean,
yeah. Let me ask you a couple questions about you.
Go
it
ahead.
Made mention, Mr. Allen was asking questions, and you talked. You kind of segued into the Minneapolis Police Department, which, of course, has a legendary and notorious history. But I'm a little puzzled on how you will really get through to Janae, because Janae, who's been on the department, if I'm not mistaken, 28 years or 26, Janae was there when the procedures were imposed by the Department of Justice on this department, and for 5 years there was a monitoring mechanism in place, monitored by the Department of Justice, utilizing citizens. So it's clear after some of these, you know, outrageous acts, and particularly given the amount of money that this department pays out, it looks like somewhere or another it just doesn't get across. It looks like there's a culture within the department, and I guess I'd have to say in some respects Chief Hartow has to take responsibility for that culture, because in some regard she was a part of that culture. And so one of the red flags that goes up when I hear people talk about, you know, getting the community together, getting the leaders together, bringing them together, sitting down, let's try to get on the same page, and et cetera. As a historian, you know, it's quite clear to me we've been this way before in modern times, and it never works.
Okay.
We're told a bunch of fluff, if you will. People talk out of both sides of their mouths, and when it's all said and done, the community is left to suffer. Will it be your intention, and this will be my last question, will it be your intention to ask Janae to give you a narrative and a scenario on why this culture continues to fester in this department? And the reason I'm saying this to you, because I bring portfolio to the table, because I presided over the investigative component of the Minneapolis Civil Rights Commission many, many years ago. In fact, we fought a famous case of litigation and won, and then the city council in 1973 stripped the commission of all of its subpoena authority, et cetera. And I've been there on other occasions. I was there for the civilian review fight, which is a disaster. The Kip Brown and that crew should be fired and terminated the first day of whoever the next mayor's tenure is. But the real problem is this tension continues to exist. And I'd really like for you to ask Janae, and you have enough time for doing the remainder of the campaign,
yep,
to ask Janae what are her thoughts about really coming together with an authentic discussion, a sincere discussion, a well-motivated discussion, which has significant end results. I'd certainly like to ask you to have her do that. Also,
yep,
I'd like to have you ask her what – by the way, let me just ask you this question. Do you know the current numbers of officers of racial complexion in the department? Have you looked at that? Oh, you do not.
I haven't
okay.
looked at that yet. Yep.
Yeah, less than 100 out of a 850 member department. I'm not talking about minorities, because minorities
right.
are always white women.
Right.
I'm asking the question, officers of color. The largest contingent by race, non-white, are African Americans at about 63, and it's been that number for the last 5 or 6 or 7 years. Of course, I came up in a town at a time in this town when, before probably you were even born, when we had 3 Negroes on the department and considered ourselves to be happy, and that was just as recently as the 1960s. But I would hope that you would reach out to you know, extract from her, elicit from her thinking on how to approach this problem, because it, you
yep.
know, these PR pieces that Cindy Barrington, you know, runs out there with, and the Star Tribune runs out there with, I mean, it sounds great, but the only problem is you've got those of us who are historians, have been here, have fought the battle, and have seen no significant results, if you will. And so I just hope that as you pursue the opportunity to become the next mayor of the city of Minneapolis, that in that particular question you would ask. I'll give you one more, because I'm obligated to my fellow black comrades, particularly in that I also sat for 20 years as the federal overseer for the fire department. We are going to basically have a significant reduction of black firefighters at the Minneapolis Fire Department. I would strongly suggest that as you meet with the chief, that you also reach out to the other racial and ethnic associations. And in the fire department, I would certainly encourage you to reach out to Captain Rucker and the African-American firefighters, because there have been a series of events in which Mayor R.T. Ryback has signed off on, in which there will be a significant continued decrease of African-American or black firefighters in this department. And so I would certainly encourage you to reach out to the Black Firefighters Association. There is no Black Police Officers Association because they've been destroyed, but there are some black officers out there that you may want to talk to. I appreciate the opportunity to chit chat with you. Go ahead, Don.
And you know what, Ron? I just want to make a comment. You know, you're so right, and that's why, you know, I reached out to the chief to set up this meeting on July 18th that, mm-hmm. you know, as part of a, in my mind, you know, one of the characteristics of being a great leader is really, you know, equipping yourself with the information. So my meeting with her is to exactly do that, to really understand, you know, over the years, you know, the culture and really what has been going on, because there is tension. You know, there is a lot of stuff going on. So, you know, before, you know, we can really, you know, and I told her, we in order to be successful, you know, we've got to address, you know, we've got to come together. We've got to work together in this. And you're so right. The culture is number one. So I will definitely, you know, ask her about that in terms of authentic discussion. And number two, good point. I will definitely reach out to the Black Firefighter Association. I would, you know, welcome a discussion. And,
all right.
Once again, learn more about where, you know, what their challenges are and how, you know, I can continue to be an effective mayor going forward.
Well, certainly. Stephanie, that's all one can ask of you, and then hold you to the implementation of accountability and respond. All right.
Exactly.
Don, your guest.
Yeah. Well, people know, if you want to find out more information about candidate Stephanie Woodruff for Minneapolis mayor, go to WoodruffMPLSMayor.com. That's WoodruffMPLSMayor.com. And also, next Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., you can meet her in person at Sunnyside Restaurant. That's next Saturday, the 13th, if I'm not mistaken, of July, from 10 to 1 p.m. At Sunnyside on the corner of Morgan and Glenwood. Find out more about that on Facebook. Stephanie, thank you for your time.
Thank
Great.
You, Stephanie.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate
All right.
It.
Take
and,
care.
Enjoy the
All
rest
right.
of the holiday. All right.
All right.
Here. Thank you.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, Don. All right. Good discussion there. A couple of quick things. You say we have some callers?
We have callers in the queue. I went and checked.
I thought we had callers waiting that wanted to speak in a live manner. Oh, okay. Let me do this very quickly. Tensions continue to boil over in Egypt. Not so much fighting today, though it's evening now in Cairo, but there's been problems in Alexandria, been problems in the so-called Upper Nile cities and et cetera. No one really knows the death toll. The United States refusing to use the term coup, a coup d'etat, if you will. So the Obama administration continues to play the games of trying to not be transparent. President Morsi, who was elected through the democratic process, you know, if I were a lot of democratically elected presidents, chiefs, executives, heads of states, I'd be a little concerned about an accepted doctrine that says, well, if we grow weary of you within, particularly if it's not a parliamentary form of government per se, if we grow, you know, agitated with you, that we put you out of office within a year, because if that's the doctrine that the Obama administration is supporting, then Barack Obama should have been recalled, though there is no recall process, should have been impeached in 2009, and certainly be looking at impeachment now, if you talk in terms of the attacks that are being leveled on him by the conservatives, if you will. But coup d'etat has taken place, and the bloodbath, it continues in Egypt, man. I hope we're not talking about putting any young Americans' boots on the ground, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hope that's not the case.
That's right. Yeah. Trayvon Martin, very quickly, the defense has rested. the prosecution has rested. The defense put on their first couple witnesses, the mother of George Zimmerman, his uncle, who was the most patriotic guy I ever saw for somebody that really is, you know, a questionable individual with respect to the 26 years that he served in the United States military as a American operative in South America and particularly in Panama. But we'll get to that at some other point in time. But anyways, George Zimmerman, as we said for the last couple weeks, George Zimmerman clearly not testified. I can't, no way in the world they can put him on the stand. And we still hold to our prediction, 70-30 acquittal.
Yes.
70-30 acquittal. One of the five white women on the six-member jury will, in fact, vote not guilty, no matter what the evidence is. And it'll be interesting. I talked to a relative of mine, my aunt, who lives in western Florida, if you will, down along the so-called Gold Coast. She says that they are anticipating and readying for uprisings in Sarasota, Bradenton, down towards Fort Myers and et cetera. So this thing very well could explode if there is a not guilty verdict returned. And I just feel, Mr. Allen, that it certainly is. One other piece wanted to kind of leave and laugh to you about last night. Hannity, my man Hannity, he was shucking jive and he was talking jive on the air last night. He had the Black Conservatives of America on, and there were some names that were known, some that were not, but it was interesting, their dialogue. But I think that they did articulate some real criticisms of President Obama that people are going to have to weigh, if you will, though I do not see them as having a significant political forceful role in the thinking of Black America per se. But these are the conservative leaders, Mr. Allen, that sit behind closed doors and undermine their own community. Oops. Very interesting gathering. All the ladies were dressed to the T. The gentlemen were making sure that they were basically all dressed to the T. And, of course, Hannity had them acting and responding in the most unorganized manner I ever saw. They were like a bunch of school kids. They were all screaming and hollering to be heard, recognized, and et cetera. So, in other words, there was no format, and I don't know that they understood that what they were displaying was the very thing that they were complaining about, accountability, structure, organization, and et cetera. They're the most disorganized group of people that I've ever seen. But go ahead. So that's kind of a couple of items. Phone lines are certainly on. Don, give us that number, man.
Sure. Phone lines are wide open at 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Phone lines are wide open. Hey, Mr. Edwards, it looks like Edward Snowden has found a home.
He's going to Venezuela. You still there, Don? You're breaking up again. Is he going to Venezuela, or is he going to be with my good friend Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua? Where is he allegedly going?
It looks like he's going to Nicaragua. He's willing to give President Daniel.
Daniel Ortega,
yes. Give him.
Yeah, Don, we're having some real bad problems here with reception, man. Can we get that straightened out there?
Okay, I ain't working.
I'm losing you quite a bit, but go ahead. What's the latest? You've got something there on the big board that has Ortega indicated that Edward Snowden is en route, or what's the genesis for the comment?
Well, yesterday there was something that came out, a little blurb on CNN, and I am actually looking here on the in the studio computer for that story or an update to that story to give a little bit more information. But it looks like he is headed to be right there with Daniel Ortega, or President Ortega. And it says Bolivia, Venezuela, Bolivia.
The Bolivians are talking in terms of closing the American embassy after that fiasco. The Spaniards yesterday, Spain told on the United States. So the French came close. They're not taking that heat because, you know, Spain and France and them have some significant trade agreements in South America. You know, it's what keeps their little countries going. And the leadership of South America, apparently every president of every country there in South and Central America came together for an emergency meeting. You know, you didn't get a lot of coverage in our media here in the United States. I guess the NSA shut that down. But they are enraged on how the president of Bolivia has been treated, how he's been disrespected, what they did to him. And that caused certainly two presidents, Venezuela and Nicaragua, to step up and indicate that they would grant asylum to Edward Snowden, as well as Iceland. The Icelandic parliament, Don, 3 days ago passed legislation indicating that asylum would be granted to Edward Snowden. So it looks like he's got possibly four places he can certainly go.
Yeah, well, that sounds great. We'll see what happens.
Uh-huh.
I had posted that he probably will not live past 30 days if he ends up in Venezuela. So we'll see what happens.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think that Venezuela's security forces are even better than Nicaragua and maybe Bolivia, where I would not see him living too long as if he went to Iceland. Iceland's just too small, little island there way up in the North Atlantic. Too many people would be sympathetic to the American way of thinking, if you will, whereas the regimes in Nicaragua, Bolivia, and Venezuela, a little different mindset. But, hey, I think the man has a right to asylum. He continues to tell on this government. My God, people now finding out that the post office has been photographing and looking into their mail. Now, when we black folks said that, many years ago, we were considered to be conspiracy idiots and dummies and theorists and et cetera. No such thing was going on. This young man in those five computers has all of the evidence and all the secrets of America's intel operations. Boy, I tell you, I'd be nervous if I were them. I'd be real nervous.
Yeah. Actually, we don't have any more privacy, Mr. Edwards. I'm currently reading this book. I know who you are and saw what you did.
Uh-huh.
And it's telling me that I'm on my Facebook page, and I am looking at the ads on the right-hand side. And it's telling me that data aggregators, these are multi-billion dollar companies running these data aggregators that are reading all my information and tailoring ads and coupons to what I saw on Facebook. So I
stuff
for school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Don, I'm really having a hard time. There's atmospheric problems, obviously, unless the NSA is, you know, doing something to us. But you're really breaking up a lot. I don't know if we're breaking up over the air like this. I'm going to have someone give me a call on one of my cell phones to see if we're coming across. But, man, the reception is terrible.
Yeah, well, I have a clear signal from your studio here, we're up and we're on. So,
Okay. All right, what else we got, man? What's happening? Leadership is meeting right now as we talk at Brian Coyle Center. By the way, massive fight at Washburn High School's athletic field yesterday amongst Somalis at a soccer tournament. That is really a bad situation, if you will. What's your thinking on this, Don?
Well, I think, again, the Minneapolis Public Schools have not done a good job and dealing with, you know, the Somali students and the Black American students and understanding that culture. And, again, this goes back to the incident at South High. You know, Minneapolis Public Schools has not done a good job on addressing this and fixing the challenge within that culture so they adapt to the American culture in the public schools, which is, I hate to say, is just terrible. But, you know, they're not doing a good job. I don't think they know how at this point. And they expect
that
more.
That is really too bad, because the mayoral candidate, Stephanie, was talking in terms of one of the things, if elected mayor, she certainly want to look at is the continued achievement gap, which people keep talking about. Only problem is when you look at the latest figures for employment, it looks like there's an achievement gap between all races now. It used to be kind of funny when it was just kind of the blacks and maybe a small other group of colors, if you will, Native Americans. But the latest statistics show that young white kids, basically, unless their mommy and daddy got a fairly good nest egg, they're not getting any work either. And the numbers are just frightening. Do you know that amongst African Americans in the age category of basically 14 15 to 20, 95% unemployment.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, 95% unemployment. So a black youngster in high school who is, you know, committed and wants to get out here and work and do the right thing and not wind up incarcerated and suffer only has a 5% chance within their age group, not within the overall configuration, just within their age group, which means in the overall configuration, their chances are about a half of a percent. But it's really sad in a country that as prospers and makes as much money as this country does for the upper 1 to 2 percentile, it's really sad that the young of this nation have so little to look forward to, and black youngsters have even less to look forward to. It's really sad. It's, you know, I'm looking at all this construction going on in our city here, Don, and contrary to what these characters at the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department say, there are no black folk working on these jobs, man.
No, not at all.
We go out
not
and take pictures, man. We take pictures. We monitor the propaganda that Velma Corvell and them put out. I mean, ain't no black folk working, man. I mean, you know, they just keep telling them stories, and then the leaders just keep having meetings going over out there to Globe University and places like that and keep talking in terms of the folks they got trained and ready to go. It's a shame before God, man. But anyways, just the thought of a commentator. Well, any calls, anything out there?
But you just brought up a really important point. Again, let me give that phone number, 347-246-3904. You know, usually the Star Tribune will publish the test scores. I'm sitting in front of a 4th, 2013 story by...
By who, Don? Lost you again, man.
Oh, by Steve Brandt.
He wrote
on June 24th, but there are no links to any test scores at all whatsoever.
Right.
Well, I'm looking at that, and I don't see anything. And I'm at the Minnesota Department of Education website looking for this year's test scores, and I don't see them posted as yet.
Yeah, technically they were supposed to have been they're supposed to be released by the middle of June, certainly no later than this past week, first week in July. It's not happening. Stan Allen has been totally unavailable to respond. You can't even get a call in to Superintendent Bernadier Johnson and this guy Gore, who is the new administrative superintendent, if you will. it's a sad commentary. But as a caller said to us last week, until the black community is prepared to stand up and really take a direct action and return to the days of the 1950s and 60s, and that is shut things down until corrective action is taken, people being prepared to make the necessary sacrifices, we'll just be talking.
Yeah.
Some of us are called upon to try to help people on an individual basis, but at some point, I know in my case, I'm overwhelmed by that in some cases because I head up no organization. I don't have the resources other than resources that I can self-develop, if you will. And I'm looking at these meetings and things, folks getting together on Father's Day and giving each other a pat on the back and a car and talking in terms of what they're doing with their children and et cetera. And that's just not true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really not true.
Yeah, I'm looking at Mr. Edwards, the website. It has four categories, MC, percentage of professional.
Don, it's got to be on your end, buddy. You're speaking, and I can't. Yeah. You're breaking up. It's on your end there. But go ahead. Do what you were saying. There's some statistics to say what.
The capacity of students tested in Minnesota public schools, and it's looking like it's really just 2012 numbers. There's no current numbers there at all whatsoever. So maybe they'll figure out how to get that up eventually here. Because they are past due, like you said earlier.
Yeah, well, maybe Senator Hayden or Senator Bubba Joe Champion can facilitate for their community, because the community that always is adversely impacted certainly has a right to know what accomplishments and goals have been met in the education of the African-American child. And should not have to wait until this time next year for, you know, 2012, 2013 statistical printout. I mean, you know, it's really just a sad commentary, man. I mean, it's just unbelievable when you continue to look at the employment figures here in the metropolitan area for the African American. I mean, we're just one of the black conservatives said that last night on Hannity, and I mean, I could not disagree with her. Is that we're dying. We're just absolutely dying, and we're afraid to speak out. You know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's only so much you can say about the fact that all your leaders are concerned about is putting some money in their pockets and trying to run cover for boss, for massa, if you will. But it, God dang, at some point, one should be concerned. I mean, you go down there to juvenile court, man. You go down there to the regular court settings, Ramsey and Hennepin County and et cetera. I mean, it is a crime, really. It is just outrageous, the number of African-Americans, particularly our young people, who are sitting up there in the courtrooms about to be adjudicated into the criminal justice system, you know. I just don't know where our responsibility or sense of responsibility and accountability is. I have no idea where it's at anymore. But what else we got?
You know, I'm just going to add something, a little piece to that. If you should be able to hear me a lot clearer now. I was just thinking about, you know, who do we turn to here in the Twin Cities? Like, if there's an issue or a challenge, where are the press conferences? Where are the people that stand up? Like you did when you were at the Urban League for families and victims of police brutality and discrimination. It seems like they've all ran away from even representation of the community. And now, if you look, you see all these events. You know, the Council on Black Minnesotans just had their Power of Unity event, and it seemed like every fringe group out there has an event going on, including this one this afternoon at 4:30 over the Brian Coyle Center that you just mentioned. I just received an invite to that, Mr. Edwards. And
I thought it was 3:30. They initially said 3:30. Now it's 4:30.
Yeah, it's 4:30. Just received an invite from school board director Kim Ellison for that event.
Why now? I mean, well, somebody must have called her and told her listening to this broadcast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're having a meeting. Initially it was 3:30, and in fact, initially it was 3:00 because at 3:30 the Somali soccer tournament at Washburn, in which there was a violent outbreak of confrontations yesterday. In fact, they brought in special officers to try to handle the potential for any outbreak today, and everybody's hoping that it doesn't happen. But you got an invitation long after the fact, Don, long after the fact.
Yeah. Well, you know what? They have phone numbers on this flyer here, and maybe, you know, we should call one of them and see what's going on.
Well, I would assume that they're all in the conference. Well, give it a ring. We have no propunction. There's nothing wrong with us putting them on the air. Dial the number up. Let's see who answers the phone.
Let's see who answers this phone here. Okay, let me just get this number in. I love it when they put numbers there, Mr. Edwards. 5-2-9-5-1. Okay. We are dialing.
Okay, all we want to know is what's the agenda for this afternoon?
Mm-hmm. For the family reunion.
Uh-huh.
Oh, still ringing.
Well, it sounds like nobody's at home. There's nobody in the kitchen.
Yeah, it looks that way. Looks that way. No one's answering.
Well, let's see. Hey, let's go two more times, because normally you should get a voice message.
Yeah, you should, but you know what? There's also three numbers on here, and I know this one gentleman who would be glad if he answers his phone to I'm just giving this number to the engineer so he can dial it because he doesn't see what I'm looking at. But
okay.
Yeah, so he will dial it, and then they'll patch it in here to us, and we'll get some answers and see if we can't figure out what the deal is today.
Yeah, because they're starting as they probably just started. They're probably a good 40-45 minutes into the gathering, and then they're just starting over at Washburn Field.
Hello? Hello. Hello.
Yes.
This is Hassan.
Oh, who's this?
Your phone is like really out of static.
Yes, I'm on the highway. Can I call you back in a month?
Oh, you had a bad connection there, Don. I probably had a better connection. He said it was his name was Hassan. He said
Hassan.
I probably had a better connection than you did. For whatever reason, Hassan is the gentleman. Okay, you called him again. Let me see if I can get a clear. The NSA probably will let me get a little better facilitation with him here. Please, Mr. NSA man. Please, Mr. NSA man. We're gonna make up a song. I'm gonna contract with one of them hip hoppers to do a Mr. NSA man.
Mm-hmm.
For our international listeners, that's our listen into guy, the National Security Agency. Powerful, powerful people. I don't think Hassan's gonna pick up the phone. Is that a different number from the second?
Yeah, that was a different Hassan. Okay, yep. And we're just gonna hang that up because he's not gonna answer that phone.
Okay,
but yeah,
okay,
That was another number, but I just wanted to see what's going on. It sounds like he's pretty busy, but I got a really high pitched static sound in my headphones, and I just didn't want to talk over it. Although I think he could hear, you know, what I was saying.
He sounded a little tad irritated that you were calling him at a time when obviously he's in the middle of a big political conference, if you will. You know, this is an important facilitation for the Somali community. In light of the violence that is going on, there are some things which I'm not at liberty to talk about as it pertains to how bad it is, security matters involved, but they've really got a bloodbath going on out there amongst the Somali groups, gangs. This is, you know, outside of the Klan, but it involves the clans. And when I say clans, I'm not about the Ku Klux Klan, I'm talking about those groups that are identified within the Somali culture. Tribe, clan, and et cetera. It is really frightening, real dangerous, real dangerous. A lot of guns on the street right now, a lot of gun activity by Somalis. Of course, the black community has been faced with this for quite some time, but now it's really spilled over. And, of course, we have periodic, sporadic coming out of the Asian community, and, of course, the Mexicans are continuously involved in gunplay, but for some reason or another, the papers don't give as much play to that. Oh, by the way, nothing from the Minneapolis Star Tribune on the hanging, the lynching of a 9-year-old African-American child here over a week ago. Star Tribune has indicated in concert with the police department that they will try to suppress this. Earlier in the week, they were saying they had a 13-year-old African-American as a key suspect. But I don't think, Don, that that's working out. You know what I'm saying? But anyways, mm-hmm. For those of you out there who are leaders, Ecumenical and all the rest of them who've gotten real quiet, that was a 9-year-old black child that was hung by the neck until dead. But, you know, the word is we don't want to do anything to rock the boat in this mayoral and automatic contest, if you will. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Don, let me do this. Something I had meant to talk about last Saturday. As a historian, I am just absolutely amused by the game that white folks play and some Negroes, after the testimony of Rochelle Antille, the young, very courageous African-American sister in the Trayvon Martin. You know, they kept talking about cracker being a racial sensitive word.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's just totally untrue. And let me just give you a historical perspective on that. White folks been calling each other crackers for as long as there has been a spoken word. And let me give you the best example. And anybody, Billy Bob or any of them, my good friends out there in Idaho and et cetera, for 40 years in the old Southern Association, that was minor league baseball, A, double A, and triple A, Atlanta, Georgia, you know, which, of course, wasn't as sophisticated back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and even into early 50s. They had a baseball team there for 50 years called the Atlanta Crackers.
Mm-hmm.
So how could that word cracker be that insensitive when you named your baseball team right in the heart of Dixie, the Atlanta Crackers?
Mm-hmm.
And for anybody that wants to challenge that, go to the Almanac, Baseball Almanac,
go back, take a look at the lease, take a look at the Southern Association, and take a look at the period from 1920 up to 1950, 52, 53, thereabouts, when they finally started talking about letting Negroes play on teams below the Mason-Dixon line. I just had to say that because I've listened to all these white commentators and even African-Americans who were trying to make sure they kept their jobs as contributors, you know what I'm saying? Talking about how offensive the word cracker was. And I said, the word cracker amongst the white culture is not a negative. They affectionately called each other cracker, you know?
Yeah.
And they had named a baseball team, just like they were as comfortable with naming the Washington Redskins, the Redskins, if you will, and have refused, and the NFL has refused to force the Washington franchise to drop Redskins, if you will. That was the same kind of reflection as it pertains to the old Atlanta Crackers of the Southern Baseball League, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I tell you, I just cannot believe the absence of history in this country. And because of the miseducation of the Negro, our people are not even able to defend some of this stuff. You know, if it wasn't for Brother James and a couple of others that call in on these programs, we think we were just talking to the wall.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but I had to get that one in, Don, because the word cracker is not seen within the white culture as racially insensitive. It was used in that manner in order to attack the primary issues in the matter of the trial of George Zimmerman, okay? Atlanta Crackers. But go ahead, Don, what else we got, man? That phone number, get that phone number out there. Anybody want to call and talk to us and chat?
Yeah, sure. That phone number is 347-426-3904, and we're working with about, four more minutes left from this hour.
Oh, we're just going to four? Okay, Don,
Yeah. And so, our phone lines have been wide open for the last 45 minutes. Y'all pick up the phone and call, Reverend McPhee, anybody else that's listening, Al McFarland, someone, pick up the phone and call. We would enjoy to hear any conversation that you'd like to have.
Okay, now something we've been missing right now in the month of July, the NAACP National and the Urban League National Conventions are going to be taking place. In fact, the NAACP, which normally comes first, may have started next week, and the Urban League will basically be 2 weeks later or the last week. You know, we need to check. You need to check your website there and find out when those organizations will be having their annual meetings, because it's going to be interesting what they're going to say about the fact that black Americans are not going to have much of an opportunity to vote anymore in this country, contrary to what folks are trying to say with the dismantling of Civil Rights Act and Provision 4. You can basically forget it. But we need to make sure we post that, Mr. Allen, at big NAACP and in the big Urban League national meetings. So I know that delegations from our city the Urban League in St. Paul doesn't have an Urban League anymore, so there'll only be one delegation coming out of Minneapolis.
They don't.
But there'll be four coming out of the NAACP.
Wow.
Yes, sir.
Wow.
Yeah, we need to be on top of that, man. We've been a little remiss.
We're going to have to check in with our friend Reverend Pinckney and ask him what he's doing for that. Because,
Let's put him down for a phone call, conference call next Saturday.
Let's do that.
I bet you he's getting ready to go to the National NAACP and tear it up.
Yes, I think he is. Okay, well, in the last 2 minutes, you have any closing thoughts, comments here, Edwards?
Not really, other than, I just wish that my government would be truthful and transparent, and when there is a coup d'etat, that you represent it correctly and call it what it is, and even if that means pulling back the dollars from the Egyptian military, here's what it is. The Egyptian military really are the employees of the United States of America, because that $1.6 billion that we give to them annually, we just gave them their payment 2 weeks ago, that's what keeps the Egyptian military going. So we are their employer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
And if we didn't want them to do a coup d'etat, that's all we had to do was to tell our stockman on the floor, we want you not to do a coup d'etat, or in other words, we want you to put that kind of pop in that cooler and not that kind of pop. We want you to put the Morrissey pop cans back in the cooler. Okay? I mean, we pay the salaries of the Egyptian generals. I mean, how dare the Obama administration and others say that we don't have anything to do with it, but we don't think it's a coup. You know, that's what causes your popularity ratings to drop down. And I know as a conservative, you appreciate that, okay?
Yeah.
Say,
yeah.
Let's see if we can get a couple of the people that were on Hannity. Maybe, you know, you as a – oh, because two of the people, Don, were from your Frederick Douglass Institute or foundation.
Oh, that must have been Tim Johnson then. Okay.
Tell him that we saw it, man, and we need him to speak to us from the black conservative point of view.
Yes, I will call him and have him on the show for
all
next
right.
week.
No problem. All right. All right. They're getting ready to do the casualty count on the crash. All right. Finish it up.